You probably know her as Drusilla Barber, the feisty runaway turned fashion model who starred for years on the long-running daytime drama The Young and the Restless.
Oh, yes, Carmen, come in. Close the door.
Is this about Project Flair?
No, this is about Project Stay Away From My Husband.
Excuse me? You're not deaf. Where is this coming from?
Where is this coming from? Where is this coming from? You know, perhaps this routine worked with other men's wives.
It's whoa, time out. Are you accusing me of something?
Don't make me pull out an Afro puff. My husband is off limits to you.
You may also know her as Dr. Amanda Bentley on the primetime series Diagnosis Murder. But what you may not know about Victoria Rowell is that she spent her entire childhood in foster care, and she spent nearly two decades working to help other kids in foster care. She talks about all of this in her new book, The Women Who Raised Me. She joins us here in Studio 4B. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
Now, you know, when you hear the term foster care, I think many people think tragic stories, abused, neglected kids, stressed out, greedy foster parents. That is so not your story.
No. The Women Who Raised Me is more of an homage to celebrate women who just gave of themselves selflessly. And I wanted to write my truth.
Obviously, you've written a whole book about your life, but if you could just tell us briefly how it is that you happened to be in foster care. Now, you were born in Maine.
I was born in Maine, and my mother was unable to care for myself or my other siblings. I was immediately placed into a hospital orphanage, and I was placed with my first foster mother, Bertha Taylor. She and two of her friends in Gray, Maine raised me. I then lived with Agatha Armstead, the only woman I would come to call Ma, who noticed that I had a propensity for classical ballet.
Now, your first foster mother wanted to adopt you, and she
yes.
was not allowed to, in part because...
She's white. Bertha Taylor was of European heritage, and she was the first person that went to the hospital and said, I'm taking this child. And then her two friends, her neighbors, rallied around her, Laura Sawyer and Aretha Dunn. And the three of them were like the three musketeers. They battled the system. We don't care about laws. They said, this is ridiculous. We're supposed to be coming together. They were church women on top of it.
But eventually they were thwarted by the system.
They were thwarted by the system.
And you were given to an African-American family, which was not that easy to find.
No.
In Maine.
The Armsteads were Bostonians, and they... Agatha had saved $2,000 as a Rosie the Riveter, and she bought the 60-acre farm, which was not easy as a black woman either, married or not. And that's where I lived. And Agatha struck up a relationship with my natural mother, Dorothy. She felt it was imperative that Dorothy know, regardless of her state, that she should know, if possible, where her children were. And also...
That must have been hard, though. I mean, the fact is, your mother was schizophrenic.
Well, yes, she was, and she died so. But it was also an opportunity to peel off the mystery. Agatha was a very straightforward person. And she believed, even as a child at the age of six, that I should know the truth. And so Agatha explained to me, Vicky, this is your mother. This is what her malady is. And I want you to have compassion for her. And I did.
There have been so many memoirs in recent years, you know, not just from actresses, from women in all walks of life. They seem to be consumed with tragedy, you know, incest, abuse, hardship, and not to diminish the suffering that these women have endured that they want to talk about. But and often it's about victimhood. And your story is very much about what you learned from all the hard things that came your way. And I was wondering, was this a conscious choice on your part that you wanted to focus on the learning, or is that just who you happen to be?
It has been taught to me to look at where the lesson is from the beginning. Agatha showed me how to do that by learning how to plant a garden. And so my lesson started with seeds, literally. And we would grow tomato plants, for instance, in peat pots. And that through planting a garden season after season and reaping the harvest and tapping trees for maple syrup, and all of these lessons led me to a place of tremendous understanding.
Do you think that though you were lucky, do you think you were especially blessed, or do you think there's something in you that allowed you to absorb all the lessons that were in front of you?
Well, first of all, as a national spokesperson for the Annie E. Casey Foundation, Casey Family Services, I impart this piece of knowledge to foster youth. No one person is made up of only two people. We're flanked by generations and ancestors of and upon ancestors. And so looking at the bigger picture, my DNA is rich. So perhaps I was wired already with this. It's in my DNA. But I do have an aptitude to want to get the lesson in every circumstance. And I implore of youth to do the same.
I'm just curious, though, because as I said, the tone of your book is very much about what can be gleaned. But it was not easy. I mean, there were times when you describe having an apple to eat in a day when you were on your own and trying to make your way initially in your career.
There are some
very difficult situations that you were in.
Those were not happy times.
No.
And you're wondering, how do you get the lesson out of that? The lesson there is that I held on to those stories. I think the things that are invisible that people give us are undervalued. And I think people like myself who are met with incredible obstacles, we make a decision because, and I write about it in the book, it's like a piece of dental floss. You can step onto the other side. And I had to look at the value in what people were telling me.
No, you didn't have to. I mean, you could have given up. There are a lot of people
who
would have been in your circumstances who have just said, I can't do it.
And they do.
I can't do it.
And they do.
It's too hard.
And there were times when I thought I might give up. But I also wanted to do it because I knew of all the hard work that these women had shared.
So what's up lately professionally? Just recently, your character, Drusilla Winter, left The Young and the Restless after 11 years. She went over the side of a cliff.
It's a cliffhanger.
Oh, okay.
It's a cliffhanger. The character of Drusilla has been very, very popular in daytime television, not exclusively, because she's a puller up by the bootstraps kind of a gal. And
not that we know anybody like that, but go ahead.
No. Yeah. And
do you think you might go back?
If circumstances...
Since she was last seen on the cliff?
I never say never. I think that circumstances would have to change for me to go back to any daytime drama. I need to see more diversity, not only with African-American producers, writers, cameramen, actors, but also in all ethnic communities, because I cannot responsibly... sit in the lap of luxury on the number one daytime drama in television and not be proactive. So I've been very proactive and I have seen some change, but not enough.
Victoria Rowell, it was great to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Victoria Rowell is author of The Women Who Raised Me, a memoir. She joined us in our studio in Washington.